Hey, Stu.
Tom.
This is Tactical Fitness Report with Stu Smith. This is podcast 21.
21. So, we're legal. 21.
So we're going to do an Ask Stu segment here. And we have a bunch of questions that we've collected. But there was a great one that was the genesis for your recent Ask Stu segment. And this one was a question written in to you by a fellow named Charles. And Stu, if you don't mind, I'm going to read this because it's long. And so I ask that our listeners bear with us here. But it does hit on a lot of aspects that we've talked about in our
just
podcast.
Just about every one of them.
Just about.
And it asks a lot of questions that we'll cover. Yeah.
So here we go. Greetings, Stu. First, I'm enjoying your podcasts. They provide a great wealth of information, no matter what your goals of fitness level are. Bottom line, great books, great information online. Thanks for all your hard work in translating that into an easy-to-use information. He goes on to say, I'm a Navy vet, P3s, very cool, 58 years old, and in the last couple of years, he's been using your material and Hal Higdon's guides to train to run his first half marathon, some 5Ks, 5 milers, 15Ks, and a 10-mile run. He's been slowly getting better in his running, just in under 10 and a half minutes per mile for these distances, running about 20 miles a week, and ramping up little bit to run longer runs. Now, here's some of the issues. He's starting to have hip soreness. Hamstrings get sore and tight. He mentions that the foam roller's been really a help for that. So here's the general question. Is it time to quit running and do more yoga and swimming? His swimming is subpar. He was just able to make the requirements at boot camp, so that would be a good challenge to work on. He's 220, weighs 220 and is 5'10". Working on cutting out sugar and dropping more weight. He was using running as a goal to keep himself on track while he's exercising, but he doesn't love running. He really is looking to achieve all-around fitness and has been studying the periodization method of training that we've been talking about. And the question comes back to, is it time, though, to move away from running and move into yoga and swimming? Or is there something else you would recommend? And he thanks you, and this is from Charles. So a lot going on there, but it sounds, I mean, I could see where that is pretty much where people are. They have their own issues. They've got goals. They're reaching back into stuff they've done in the past, running. Not really good at swimming, so maybe take that up. Here's a lot about yoga for stretching and for longevity. A lot of questions around that, but his basic idea is, look, I want to maintain my fitness, all-around fitness. How do I best do that?
Well, first of all, that's an excellent question, because it's going to take all 30 minutes to just touch on that one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would suggest this, you know, listen to your knees when running, or back, hips, you know, when's bothering you, and maybe not run every day. You know, maybe do an every other day running program where, you know, you do running Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you do non-impact cardio activity Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And that can be a variety of things. That can be biking, elliptical, rowing, swimming, you know, all of those. You know, would probably be a lot easier on your joints. So you could still run, just maybe not run as much. And keep losing weight. I think, you know, 5'10", 220, that's pretty big for 5'10". Mm-hmm. And if you have some weight to lose, unless it's all muscle, if you have some weight to lose, you know, that will help the impact of running significantly. You'll be amazed at what 10, 15 pounds would do. You know, if you can drop yourself closer to 200, you'd be really, you know, in the zone for feeling a lot better when you run. I mean, just think about it right now. Put a 20-pound backpack on And notice the difference when you run with a 20-pound back or weight vest. Now take it off, and it feels incredible. You know, so imagine dropping that extra 20 pounds, you know, on your knees, you know, what it will do for your knees and hips and everything. So I would keep that your number one focus for right now. Maybe run every other day while you're still heavy in the 220 plus zone. But eventually, I think you don't need to give up running immediately. You know, you can, you know, especially if you're losing weight, you may find that you got another 10 years in you of running before you have to, you know, drop it and maybe add swimming and more yoga. And that's, I'm looking realistically into my future and seeing, you know, swimming and yoga as being an alternative to running year round. I mean, I don't run year round anyway because of our periodization cycle, which I think you'll feel better with that alone. You know, running in the spring and summer and maybe doing non-impact stuff in the fall and winter. Running every, and even when you run in the spring and summer, it's running every day or every other day. So, you know, you can give yourself a pretty good break, and, you know, as you age, you know, your joints will appreciate that as well.
Yeah. He was talking about hip soreness and hamstring tightness, soreness and tightness.
You know, something to also consider, Tom, is that recovery day in the middle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or let's say even just Monday, Wednesday now. You know, by Thursday, you might feel a little stiff. You know, so we always do what we call a day four mobility day, you know, each week, especially with my aging athletes. In fact, I just wrote this the other day. Tactical fitness for the athlete over 40, actively pursuing recovery and maintenance.
So, yeah, that is cool. Very cool.
It is focusing solely on you being able to add that mobility day off. I call it recovery day on day four. And, you know, that gives you, it's still a workout. It still takes 45 minutes to an hour to do. And then if you can top it off once again in the pool, with some treading and dynamic stretches, you know, after every day that you run, that will add longevity to you, I promise. Your hips will feel better. Your lower back will feel better. Hamstrings will feel better. I mean, just getting in the pool, I think, is a great addition to what you're doing, whether it is swimming or it's just getting in there to tread water and do some dynamic stretches in chest-deep water.
And you mentioned here he should always stretch.
Yes. You know, like you said, do you go to yoga and swimming? Maybe not yet, but you should at least stretch. And you will find, you know, your pliability will increase. Give yourself a couple of weeks of stretching every day. And I'm just talking 10 minutes. Every day. It can be at the beginning of the day. It can be at the end of the day. If you give yourself 2 weeks of 10 minutes every day, you'll be amazed at how that will feel. I think where people tend to, that they just don't do it consistently enough with stretching, and they don't reap the benefits of what stretching provides. But it has to be a habit. And it doesn't, you don't have to break a sweat at it. You can do it at your desk, you know, take a 10-minute break and, you know, go stretch, you know, touch your toes, go to I like to go to a flight of steps and, you know, put my foot up on about 3 steps ahead of me, you know, stretch my hips, kind of lean into that, and then do the other leg that way, straighten the leg, stretch a hamstring, do a little thigh stretch. And that's really probably the 3 main stretches you need to do, especially if you're having lower extremity pain from running at your age. As long as it's feeling better with stretching, and this is something to differentiate just tight muscles and injury. You know, like if you have a hip injury, you know, obviously, you know, you may need medical attention for some of those type of injuries. But if it's just pure tightness, overuse injury, aches and pains, tendonitis, you know, those little things I like to call that we do to ourselves, we can undo them by stretching, dynamic stretching, foam rolling, getting in the pool and dynamic stretching, all of those things in combined, you know, throughout your week. Doesn't have to be all in one day, can be spread throughout the week, will make a big difference.
So give us those three key stretches again, Stu.
Oh, like the ones I like to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel the same thing. Because here's the deal. I run, and I'm a writer, so I come to my computer and sit down. Now, I've added a stand-up version to that, which has helped tremendously. But I find that I'm really needing to focus and concentrate. It's hard for me to stand up and do that. I don't know why. I just haven't got used to it. So I will sit down for a couple hours at a time. And then when I do that, I'm pretty stiff. So what I do is I go to my steps here down to my basement where my office is, and I take a big step. So instead of skipping a step, I skip two steps, and I put like my foot flat on that third step up there, or fourth step, and lean into it, you know, bent knee, you know, put my chest down to my thigh, you know, throw my hips forward and feel the front side of my hip flexor stretching, but at the same time, my back, hamstring, and butt are stretching on the other leg, and then we'll switch it. We'll do the same thing. Then I'll straighten my front leg and do a toe touch type of thing with my leg up, you know, on the third step. Do a little thigh stretch by taking my heel to my butt and pulling it up. And, you know, I just do that for, I'd say maybe a minute and a half max. But I do that every time I stand up, you know, from sitting at my desk. And that makes a big difference between how I feel the next day. Because if I skip that for a day for some reason and I'm sitting at my desk all day getting something done, I can really feel when I first start running again during that first 5 minutes of warming up, like I really need to warm up. Now, there are some days I go into a warm-up and I'm thinking, I'm feeling pretty good today. It might be a good day. No pain. But that is usually attributed to the day before of me doing more stretching, you know, throughout the day.
That's a really interesting one, Stu. I think we should come back to this whole idea of how does the sedentary part of your day, how do you deal with that sedentary part of your day? Because obviously, similar situation, right? Other than when I'm teaching, when I'm researching or writing or doing whatever I do, I'm doing a lot of sitting myself. Although I like you, have incorporated almost half my time standing now while I'm doing that stuff.
And that helps. I mean, I think I read a study the other day about there's a fine line between both affecting your, you know, if you stand up all day, it's right. Bad for you. If you sit down all day, it's bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So summarize, Stu, this whole point about what Charles should do.
Summarizing. My advice is keep doing what he's doing. Maybe instead of running every day, go every other day. I know Hal Hingdon's running programs, they're pretty – they're perfectly made. They're progressive, very logical in their progression. But they're also, it's typically every day. There's hardly a day off. So you might want to consider running every other day, or at least throwing a recovery day somewhere in the middle of the week. Might be Wednesday, might be Thursday for you, but the recovery day should be a non-impact warm-up, treading water, dynamic stretching in the water, foam rolling, stretching throughout the whole cycle. I think you'll benefit from that tremendously. But mainly it's just listen to your body. You know, if you feel like you need to lose weight, lose weight. You know, listen to your knees, because your knees are going to talk to you, and so will your lower back and hips, you know, especially when you're a runner. And they will say, hey, I need to stretch more, or I need to take a day off and do a non-impact day, you know. But I think the best thing you'll find is that, you know, throughout your day, if you can add in a stretch, just a minute and a half, 2 minutes, you know, every time you stand up, And it doesn't have to be a deep stretch. I'm not talking about full range of motion stretching. I'm just mean it's a very light stretching, because one, stretching when you're cold is also not a good idea, but just light stretch to loosen up your joints, you know, from having sitting down too long. That's what I would do.
Crunches versus sit-ups, Stu. Second major question. I know this is a question that we want to get to. So we should come back to Charles. So thank you, Charles, for that question.
Yeah.
We love the P3 guys. Yeah. And we encourage anybody that has these kind of deep questions, send them over to Stu, and we will deal with them. So, Stu, where do they send these things?
Yeah, just send me an email, stu@stusmith.com. You can go to stusmith.com, and you'll see a contact Stu in the upper right-hand corner. You can also go to my Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. You know, all of those are great ways to get in touch with me and ask questions.
So let's move on. Crunches versus sit-ups. So many of us had to do a lot of sit-ups to prepare for tests. Many people do. And then we have a whole group of emerging tactical athletes that are doing them now to get ready for physical tests, some form of tactical physical test. And I've noticed, Stu, that you don't have a lot of sit-ups where you don't have to have them. So, for example, for people training people like me who no longer have to do a physical test, a test for some specific job, you don't have me doing them at all. And so go through this whole issue of crunches versus sit-ups or doing ab exercises.
All right. So here's the deal. If you have to take fitness tests regularly, it is smart to practice those fitness tests and those events, because here's where people screw up. And I see it all the time, and I see people, you know, quoting studies and, you know, the Army's saying they're going to take away sit-ups because it hurts your back. But you know what? Here's what hurts your back. What hurts your back is you have a fitness test 6 months from now, and you don't do anything to prepare for that fitness test. And then 2 weeks prior to that fitness test, you do a whole bunch of running and sit-ups and push-ups, and your back starts to hurt. Well, guess what? You know, you are not conditioned to do sit-ups. And so, to be able to be in condition to do sit-ups, you need to do sit-ups. You need to do lower back exercises, plank poses, other dynamic exercises, such as even lifting weights, maybe the multi-joint dumbbell exercise or deadlifts and squats, you know, to build up a strong core. TRX exercises are fantastic for it as well, but you need to add sit-ups in there with other complementary lower back and core exercises. Where people screw up is they just do sit-ups and nothing else, or they don't do anything for 5 months, and then 2 weeks before a fitness test they start doing sit-ups, and then they say that sit-ups hurt their back. Well, being sedentary is what really hurt your back, and then you overdid it by doing sit-ups for 2 minutes as fast as you can. You know, so if you don't need to take a sit-up test, I don't think there's any reason for you to do sit-ups. There are plenty of exercises that are great for the core, even better for the core than sit-ups. So when the Army talks about changing their sit-up test, I agree. There are different exercises that are better core strength tests, the plank being one of them. But the reason for changing them can't be that sit-ups are the cause of your back pain. I think being lazy and not practicing sit-ups, you know, for the year and practicing other core activities is the cause of your back pain, or all the miles of rucking that you're doing is causing your back pain. But to blame sit-ups on it, I think, is a little bit premature, and not looking at the bigger picture of what people are doing to actively make their core weaker by not doing other exercises. So yeah, for you, Tom, you know, you don't need to do sit-ups. There's no need. You got crunches, you got flutter kicks, you can do plank poses, you can do the TRX rollout, which is probably my favorite ab exercise there is. Little swimmer exercises, you know, right arm, left leg lifts like the bird dogs, you know, all those are great core exercises that we can't neglect. And, you know, the sit-up and crunch are by far, you know, not the only exercise that you need to do. You know, they are just two in there that make up, you know, a significant part of, you know, some workouts. And it just really depends on what your goals are. If you've got to pass a fitness test, yes, you probably need to do crunches and sit-ups, but in balance with all the other core activity as well. Sorry for the long answer.
No, look, I have 20 questions here, Stu, literally.
Yeah.
And we're through number two.
Yeah, no.
Don't worry. We're going to have to keep going here because there's so many interesting questions around this. And I know you wanted to get into this whole issue of doing the core exercises and making sure that when you do them, you do the opposing exercises along with it, which is the lower back plan that you have. Yes. Let's spend a second on another interesting question that deals with warming up for the fitness test. And I remember that you told me years ago, I had to do a fitness test. I know it's hard to believe looking at me and those of you that can see this. And the way you recommended that I prepare for it, not prepare for it, but warm up for it on the spot, which made no sense to me at the time, but made a huge sense to me when I did it, which said, look, you're going to do push-ups, you're going to do sit-ups, you're going to do pull-ups, you're going to run, you're going to swim. That becomes what you do ahead of time. So make sure you get ready by doing push-ups, get ready by doing sit-ups. And I'm thinking in my head, and this is part of this crazy stuff, right? I only have so many spine lifting exercises in my body full time, right? Or as I was telling you earlier, some people have a crazy idea that there are only so many decisions I can make in a day. The same point here about push-ups. I was thinking in my mind, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that think this, is look, if I've got to do 100 push-ups here, I don't want to do sets of 5 and 10 to get ready to do 100 because I've only got so many push-ups in my arms.
Yeah.
Spend a second on this whole subject for me because it made a huge difference for me to be able to achieve.
Yeah, I think as you progress in your ability to do push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups, that warming up with small sets of 5 to 10, you know, is a really good warm-up because it's your ability to recover from that and your muscle stamina and endurance are to a level where, you know, doing 5 to 10 push-ups is not going to affect your score. It's going to actually prepare you to do 100 push-ups.
Yeah.
You know, now, if you can only do 20 or 30 push-ups in a fitness test, yeah, you're probably not at a level to where, you know, doing a few sets of 10 push-ups are going to be helpful for you. So once again, your conditioning is going to drive how hard you do a warm-up. You know, you might want to do, you know, if you're really low on the, you know, spectrum of scoring push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups, you know, you may want to do a little gentler warm-up and save all the reps that you have in your body because, you know, your warm-up might take away from some of those if you're doing too many of them. So, yeah, that's once again, I think it all depends on your abilities. If you're doing 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 20 pull-ups, you know, or somewhere in that ballpark, you know, yeah, you can do pull-up, push-up, sit-ups and, you know, warm up for 5 minutes of doing a variety of those things and be ready to roll, you know, and push your max. It's almost like, you know, when you go to high-volume calisthenics, you got to think of it almost compared to high-weight training. You know, when you go high-volume calisthenics, you don't want to do the same calisthenics day after day after day. You know, when you're lifting heavy weights, you don't want to work that same muscle group the very next day again. You need another day off in between that muscle group. Same goes for high volume calisthenics. But if you're pretty low on the calisthenic spectrum, you know, you can actually do daily push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups and see some benefit to your scores for a short period of time, you know, maybe a 2-week period. But yeah, you know, that's how I would handle a warm-up depending on your current level.
But I will say, though, when you have the ability to push out high numbers using short, small sets of this ahead of time, really allows you to push those numbers. And you know, you can see it here, and this is a question about the whole issue of mental stamina and pushing yourself while you're exercising. You know, I can always tell when I'm not pushing mentally because I'll be doing sets and I can't get very high numbers, but the longer I go, the higher my numbers go. And you know, that's not muscular, that's all in your mind. And I just wonder sometimes for these tests, if you've got the ability to push out big numbers, doing some preparatory sets helps sets not just your body, but also your mind, getting your mind in place to start doing these things. Because just going down and doing 100 push-ups is not the easiest thing for anybody.
Right. You know, especially if you're not warmed up for it, it's actually quite difficult. You know, you warm up a little bit for it, you'll see that, you know, it's definitely not that tough. If you're, you know, build up to that level. But yeah, I never thought about it as a mental build up
A mental prep. Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's a good thought. I never thought of it that way, but
yeah, I mean, because you and I worked out together, just even the other day when we were working out together and I was doing low numbers, and the longer we went, the higher my numbers got. And that's just strictly mental, right? It's just strictly mental because it's your mental state of mind is not pushing your body to where your body's ability is. So prepping yourself in the area of what you're going to do, like doing sets of 5 or 10 push-ups before you do the push-up test. If you're, as you said, if you're properly prepared, I think it helps match your mental state to your physical state.
You want to hear another thing I do? This kind of, when I'm counting reps, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm doing push-ups, for instance, and I don't count reps and say 50, 60, 70, 80, right? You know, I'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Right.
And then I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So I'll just do sets of 10 in my head.
And interesting.
So mentally, I almost feel like every time I say 1, I'm just starting over again.
Huh.
If that makes sense.
And you're doing that when you're doing your test.
Never really getting up to that.
Yeah.
So I'm never doing 80 or 90 or 100 push-ups. I'm just doing sets of 10. Right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It works. You know, especially when you start to getting close to failure, you may even want to drop that to 5. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you know, you can build up some reps that way. I think, you know, if you want to play the mental game with yourself, for me, it feels like it's easier to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 than it is to do 81, 82, 83, 84, 85.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other way that a lot of people, I know that you, and you know this too, from your training, that they used to screw with you by only counting the single digit, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2. And then they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2, right? So counting up to 100 or whatever they would be doing. But that also helps just to count out the single digit rather than saying 10 or 20 or 30, say 1, 2, 3, 4. It also keeps your mind clearer so you can count. You can count them. I don't have that problem of that anymore, Stu. I don't get that high, as I know you know. Flutter kicks. The value of flutter kicks and flutter kicks in your workouts.
You know what? I say this. Some people say they're bad on the lower back. That's why you probably want to put your hands underneath your butt You raise your butt a little bit, takes a little pressure off your lower back. However, if you are in a program where you swim a lot, you swim with fins a lot, you really need to build your hip flexors. And this is not an abdominal exercise per se. It's really more a hip flexor, thigh exercise, because when you're swimming with fins, that's where you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it in your hip flexors primarily, and also in your legs. And it's a great one. And if you really want to challenge yourself, you know, do your flutter kicks in a pair of pants, jump in the pool and do flutter kicks with wet pants on and boots, because you will be doing those if you're going to certain training programs. I will say this, you know, when I went to training, and I did a lot of flutter kicks prior, I didn't fully prepare for the suck of wet pants and boots flutter kicks. You know, that was something that I was like, I remember doing on the grinder. You know, I was like soaking wet doing flutter kicks. I'm like, oh my God, these things are really a lot harder. You know, so do yourself a favor and practice some of those if you're heading towards programs where you will be wet most of the day, and your pants will be heavy. So,
and when I was talking about counting and screwing with you, that is one of the exercises that's very easy to do and to screw with you on the numbers, because you'll be doing big numbers. But also, Stu, that's another exercise that I know mentally I can always do many more than my body tells me I think I can.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't ever forget, you know, some of the time. I mean, my class at SEAL training had a fascination with 1,000. And I don't know why. And we did 1,000 of just about every exercise you could think of. In fact, I'm looking at the list you have here. You got sit-ups. You got 8 counts. You got flutter kicks. Even jumping jacks. I remember doing 1,000 4-count jumping jacks. That sucked. I mean, my calves were on fire through that whole thing and hurt the next 2 days. You know, 1,000 sit-ups. Probably not a good idea to do. But we did it. 1,000 8-count bodybuilders. That one completely blew. We got to take a break every 250. You know, that one's 1,000 flutter kicks. Takes about 45 minutes of doing flutter kicks, 4-count flutter kicks. So, yeah. You know, sometimes you're going to go to a training program that may not be the most physically smartly laid out plan or challenge. It is more of a mental test, like you just said. I mean, you know, doing a lot of flutter kicks turns into a mental game, not just a physical game.
So I keep writing down these questions, Stu, that keep popping in my mind as I hear you talk. We've gone way over our time limit here this morning. So we're going to have to stop, but we're going to come back because we've not gotten through most of these and we got a lot left to go.
Okay.
So this is podcast 21, Stu, Tactical Fitness Report. And we've run out of time.
Okay.
All right, bud.
Well, we will be back.
We will be back.
30-minute blocks.
Later, pal.
All right. We'll see you.